Holmes & Hops is proudly supported by Platt Insurance, your local independent insurance agency offering auto, home, life, business, and farm insurance. They also have a team of specialists that help you with insuring your brewery or winery. Platt Insurance, helping you protect your tomorrow. For more information or a quote, please call them at 330-856-6244 or visit them on the web at plattinsurance.com.
There you go.
Bob Cha.
There you go.
Okay, ready?
In between the two.
Hey, everyone. Lisa Resnick, Holmes & Hops. I'm with Sarah with Modern Methods, one of the owners. I know we don't often see how often, like, the females are actually owners of these breweries, that's too. Right. So Sarah's our first female brewery owner showing up on the show mm-hmm. today, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And also Alicia with Bob Cha's.
Bob Cha's.
So I have to ask, where does Bob Cha's the name come from?
Bob Cha means Polish and grandma. Or grandma and Polish.
It could mean Polish and grandma.
Yeah, it does.
And your grandma.
Yeah, right. So grandma's lunchbox.
Mm-hmm. Oh, very cool. Which also now explains the Polish dinners.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So now the connection's mm-hmm. happening.
And that my great-grandmother was from Poland, and my grandma, who is a Bob Cha, works on the truck with me, and my mother, who's also a Bob Cha, works on the truck with me.
Oh, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. That is really cool. So when did this get started?
We started in 2017 after my great-grandmother had passed away, and we wanted to honor her legacy and show people her recipes that we had saved, and just being able to pass on some of the food heritage that we had and noticed that there was a lack of.
It's amazing. So I'm sure both of you guys can contend. And I think even one of the churches has recently stopped making pierogies.
Yeah, a lot of them have.
Which is so sad because there is such a strong Polish heritage that we have in our area.
And the Slavic heritage in general. It's huge.
Delicious food mm-hmm. too. It is absolutely delicious.
Yes.
We joke about Alicia coming up and having like Bob Cha's, outpost, I think is what Adam called it, right? Because we definitely have our, Slavic heritage residents of Warren.
Yes.
Who, whenever Alicia's, posted up at the brewery, they definitely get really excited to come out. And even my mom, who lives in New York, times where she's come out, especially the blueberry pierogi, the kind of dessert berry pierogi that Alicia does.
I have not had that from you yet.
So,
amazing.
That berry pierogi, which is a berries and cream, mm-hmm. I developed for their Droop Barrymore release.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Droop Barrymore.
Yes.
I love your name. So this is a good transition into what we're drinking right now. Speaking of Droop mm-hmm. Barrymore, we also are drinking Guy
Ficheri.
Ficheri.
So, and actually it's the same. So we have kind of our house Berliner Weiss recipe, which is a kettle sour, lower ABV. So this one's 5.2. And it's like just a nice clean kettle sour with that lactobacillus tartness. But it doesn't have a lot of kind of funk. So that's like the same bacteria that's in yogurt that makes yogurt a little tart tasting.
So this is healthy.
Yeah, sure. It's good for your gut.
I will say, for people who are apprehensive towards beer in general mm-hmm. and are more your wine drinkers, mm-hmm. this is 100% the perfect drink for you.
Yeah, especially in the summertime. We get a lot of people who are really into the fruited sours.
This is really good. This is better than any rosé I've ever had.
Well, thank you. But yeah, I mean, so Droop Barrymore, which was the where you started with the blackberry and cream pierogi. That's the same Berliner Weiss recipe with blackberries. This one, we split the batch and we did part as Droop Barrymore, and we say this is her cousin, Guy Ficheri. So it's that sour with cherry, with tart and sweet cherries.
It works out well because it reminds you of Guy Fieri, mm-hmm. which then you think food. And
yeah.
There we go.
And one of our very talented staff members, Christy Earhart, did the label artwork for both of them, which I think the can is stuck over there. But definitely we should, at some point show that because the artwork is amazing. She did such a good job with a little Guy Fieri with a cherry
follow
head.
Instagram. We'll take a photo and mm-hmm. put it up there.
Absolutely.
And then we also have this because you guys, Modern Methods is huge on community and they are huge in promoting
anybody locally and seeking and finding these people and finding ways to work with them. Mm-hmm. And artistry is definitely one of those that you guys have truly done amazing. And this beer.
Yes, our ultimate warrior.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Which has the little comic crunch
yep.
up to the yep. side. Yep. I mean, I was drawn to this beer and that's why I got
so
it.
So this is another one of our definitely returning artists, Craig Latshaw. He's done, if you're familiar with like any of our, we call them our fart beers. So Hot yes. Fart, Little Squeaker, any of those beers. Craig has done the artwork for those and a few others that we've had over the years. So he did the artwork for the Ultimate Warrior art beer and alt beer. And he just knocked it out of the park. It's so good.
Now you mentioned the Hot Fart.
Yes.
So I have to ask, because brewers are, you guys are phenomenal in naming mm-hmm. beer. Matter of fact, I think when we did the Homes and Hops 5K, all of us collectively, I think Adam gave me an opportunity. Adam is Sarah's husband, mm-hmm. also an owner of Modern Methods, gave me an opportunity to name the beer. And I quickly got a text back saying, never mind. Like, we got this.
Yeah.
It's like, so understandable.
It can be really difficult, it actually, because you try to find something that's not already in use. And most of the like most clever puns, somebody already thought of and used it and things like that. So we tend to be a little punny with some of our yes. names, which is kind of fun. But actually, so the origins of Hop Fart, one of our head brewer, Jeff Constantine, he had a homebrew recipe that was a different recipe than its current iteration, but he had a beer that he had named Hop Fart. And when we finally decided to get on board the New England IPA, yes. hazy IPA bandwagon, because yes. We resisted for a little while of like, oh, this is a trendy style and, oh. you know.
We were some like, of us like the trends.
I mean, it's a good style and it's a good beer.
I also like pop music.
There's nothing wrong with a trendy beer. So when we finally convinced Jeff, who's very much a beer purist, that like, okay, we really have to brew a hazy IPA. And he and Adam, like we finally got them on board with that. They were like, okay, we're going to brew a hazy IPA. We're going to brew an exceptional hazy IPA. We're going to make fun of you just a little bit for drinking a trendy style, and you're going to have to say the word fart when you order it.
But how many people actually go into the brewery? This is my thing. I would love to know, like, mm-hmm. the numbers. Like, how many people, like, tend to order Hot Fart mm-hmm. because it's called Hot Fart?
Versus, oh, we definitely get people who order it specifically for the name, don't even care what the style is. They think it's hysterical. We've had people come in and they're like, oh, my son lives in Columbus, but he's from the area. He would think this is so funny. I'm going to come in and buy a 4-pack of this beer so that when he comes home for the holidays, he yes. can have this, you know, this fart beer. We also have people who will come in and will order it only by the number because they won't say the name.
Oh, no way.
Not many. Most are in on the joke and are okay with it. But
that's awesome.
Yeah, we do have a couple of people who are just a little too proper to order it by name.
How many different beers are you guys brewing right now?
So in the tap room, we have 18 rotating taps. Five of those are flagships, and actually six, because one of them is our Roast Beast Nitro tap. So our flagship stout we have on Nitro okay. all the time as well. So six of those taps stay pretty consistent, and then the rest rotate seasonally, you know, based on what we're brewing at any given time. How many recipes have we done over the course of the 3 years that we've been open?
And do you keep it in a Rolodex?
Oh, there's a big brew binder. There's like holy grail brew binder that
I'm
just
not sure if I would trust it all in technology. Like, I feel like a hard copy yeah. is necessary.
Yeah, there's absolutely hard copy. And it's got like notes scribbled all because Adam and Jeff are both extremely particular about tracking everything. And that's how you get consistency from batch to batch, especially when you're working with a smaller system like True. Ours that's a bit more manual. You know, bigger brew houses might have, you know, more push button, more control over things. So they're really particular about tracking, you know, fermentation temperatures and, you know, how long did this particular yeast, what generation yep. is it on? How long did this one take to ferment out? You know, all those kinds of things. So there are notes scribbled all over. So the hard copy is definitely critical. It's digital too, just in case.
I know, but still,
yeah,
I feel
the binder is like, if it ever got lost, it would be
like, I'm definitely
a bad day.
I'm a note taker person. Like, I could be on the phone and whatever piece of paper is around me, I'll start scribbling on. If it's like a bill, envelope of a bill, I'll mm-hmm. start putting notes in, and mm-hmm. I cannot lose that that envelope.
That's right, that scrap paper.
Yes, exactly. I feel like I also know it better if I write it, mm-hmm. which is interesting. I don't know if that's true, but I feel that way. So I continue on. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I have to ask this as well. What is your background before, both of you, before getting into what you're doing now? What were you guys doing previously?
I'll let you start because you've done 1,000 different things. Alicia has tried all sorts of different things.
Yeah. So like my first job ever was a dietary aide in a nursing home because all of my family is in the medical industry.
Okay.
And then I was a dog groomer and veterinary technician for 10 years.
Oh, wow.
But like in that time, still cooking, still doing stuff. And then I went back to cooking at Shepherd of the Valley for a year.
Okay.
And then both of my parents got cancer and someone had to take care of my great-grandmother. So I quit my job, did that, and then on to food trucking. But in like that time, still, you know, cooking, still trying to think of stuff to do.
Did you always want to go into food and owning your own business?
I am very stubborn and I always wanted to have my own business. Just so no one could tell me what to do.
It's a good reason.
Yeah. And, you know, as far as cooking, I never thought that I'd be cooking for thousands of people, but here I am. And it's fun. It's awesome. I love it. I would not trade it for the world. It's amazing. And the people that I've met in the process of it, I mean, I wouldn't trade that for the world. Like the community that we have here
is phenomenal.
It's incredible.
It really is.
It is incredible.
And I will tell you this. I remember when I first moved back here from D.C., and in D.C. a lot, you can judge a book by its character. Unfortunately, you can say that. But there are those people that you can identify right off the bat. Here, I love the fact that you can't. You actually have to have the conversation with the person before there's any prejudgment made. And I absolutely love that. Mm-hmm. Just keeps you on your toes too. And there's always so many phenomenal stories that you hear.
Yes.
And life lessons that you just take with you.
Absolutely.
It is definitely a fun part of being in the service industry in that way. I mean, I can only imagine. So Alicia just, this past weekend, served how many people were at the Ohio Viking Festival?
Oh, fun.
At the Trumbull County Fairgrounds. That at
the fairgrounds. It's a blast.
Like, I can only imagine the characters that you met. Oh my
gosh. But like people that like these big, like 7-foot-tall dudes.
There,
with,
you
like,
really can't judge up what we're right.
With like black handprints over their eyes and like a bird. Well, some of them had like owls, live owls. It was part of, I think, of what, but they'd walk up to the truck and be like, I haven't had pierogies in 100 years. Yep. I would love pierogies. And I'm like, yes, sir.
You really look like a Viking. Right.
I'm like, does your bird want anything too?
That's fun. That's a lot of fun.
That's so much fun. Or like even the festivals down here, like, you know, you have Simply Slavic.
Yes.
You have the Flea. You have so many like cool things that people like Pride. Pride's amazing. Yes. Whenever they have Pride. And, you know, I know COVID kind of put a wrench in the system, but
it did.
You can still, that part of the community, that part of coming together, that is not dead. Mm-hmm. It's just people waiting.
How did you feel as a food truck owner during the pandemic and being able like to get out there still?
You're going to make me sweat. I can already feel my anxiety level.
It was a stressful year.
Yeah, because like so my main person that I work with is my 70-year-old grandma.
Oh, yes.
So when all of this started, I'm like, how am I going to ethically put my grandmother and myself at risk? I'm a mother too.
Yep.
And possibly put the rest of my family at risk by going out into the public, and no one was out. We did, when everything started, we were able to very quickly shift and transition and do meals. And we delivered meals to everyone's door for probably 2 months. And I just remember the first weeks of doing it, seeing a little literal tumbleweed go across Boardman on South Ave, where it's usually wicked busy.
It is.
And I remember when you texted me that. You're like, I just saw a tumbleweed.
You know, and like having to, these people that I know, because a lot of the people that ordered were regular customers. And like, I just remember dropping off at the door and like seeing them through the window.
It's sad.
It like, it makes me emotional, like thinking about it, because I'm like, I want you to be here when I need this, you know, I need you to make it.
Yes.
You know, and like if me delivering you food helps get you through this, like that is worth everything to me.
Yes.
And it is the same way working with you guys. Like, you know, whenever we started doing a monthly pop-up just to keep everything rolling. And when they reached out, I was like, yeah, let's do this. But, you know, it was great because they're like, let's do this in the safest way possible. Mm-hmm.
You guys were very safe. And actually, I remember having your beer delivered to my house.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We started doing.
That was awesome.
I mean, it was great that we have a really wonderful with the Ohio Craft Brewers Association. They're a really great advocacy organization for our industry. So they did a lot of work immediately with state legislature to relax some restrictions. I mean, that's not a normal thing that you can just go deliver beer to somebody's house.
It should be, though.
It should be.
They've rolled back on
it. It might be longer term now that it's happened. We'll see.
I mean, that's a whole new industry that could be created by that.
Yeah. So it made it so that we were able to get a little bit creative. We also have the benefit of being right on Dave Grohl Alley, so we could set up the lemonade stand and a drive through. And, you know, we shifted to online ordering and started working with a wonderful local photographer, Sarah Bacone, to take great pictures, because it was like, okay, people are not going to be able to get a sample of the beer, smell it, taste it, see it in person. How do we capture, you know, how cool this product is? Okay, let's work with a photographer and, you know, get some pictures up on the website. And we were able to even do online ordering and pre-order when Alicia would come do pop-ups. And, you know, so it was a lot of just kind of creative problem solving and figuring out, like, how
and
do we continue
the outdoors?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Which was nice. And talk about a good way to, it's never easy going through government layers to get approvals and everything to get what you need done.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's just parking a food truck outside of a place to adding a patio outside in an alleyway. Like, but I do think having like the push and the city recognizing the need, I mean, I would hope that helped lighten the pathway a little bit to being able to open the door.
Yeah. And Warren was fantastic to work with. Anything we needed, they were, you know, like willing to work with us and the state. So actually the holdup for us for a long time of doing any outdoor seating, because that alley is still a road, you know, Ohio legislation was such that you couldn't set up that, you know, it would be considered a temporary patio. So you couldn't get that extension of premises when you have to pull everything in at night because it's still a road.
Okay.
So that changed where we're able to do, you know, we still have to set up and tear down our patio every night, but we're now able to have that outdoor space. We kept the tap room closed all the way through the end of September because we didn't get approval for that outdoor space until like mid-September. So by that first weekend of October, we figured out like, okay, here we have some tables. We've got some, you know, stuff we can set up, places for people to sit. It, you know, it took us a couple weeks just to figure out those logistics. And then we started having on-site, and we still kept everything outdoors until I think until it really started getting cold. And then we, you know, like December, we shut down again for a couple weeks in December.
We didn't have that bad of a winter.
Yeah.
I mean, we did after like 2021, it wasn't so much fun. But 2020, I mean, it wasn't so bad.
Yeah, we were lucky like October into November that it didn't get super cold. We were able to utilize that outdoor space for a while. Then cases started to go up again. We shifted back to just carry out for, I think, 2 or 3 weeks. And then coming into the holidays, we were like, okay, patio's back open, indoor seating. You know, at that point, the state had started the statewide mask mandate. So it was a little bit easier and a little more consistent from place to place. People knew what to expect of going in. You know, it wasn't like, oh, does this place require masks? Does this place not? It became more universal.
Yes. And which is nice to have a uniform policy to be able to go through something that's so confusing to everyone.
Yep.
I think that having some controlled chaos is important, especially for businesses. It really is.
Yeah.
How have you guys seen business lately? Has it started to uptick again?
Oh, yeah. I mean, now that it's warmer summertime.
Is grandma back?
Oh, yeah. I can't keep her away.
Mm-hmm.
She's showing up whether anyone likes it or not, she's there.
But yeah, things are getting busy again. We're, you know, coming into, you know, like, okay, this is great weekend. Was this a fluke? No, next weekend's great too. We're also finding, I mean, our production team is brewing nonstop right now to keep up with the tap room, and all of our wholesale accounts are experiencing that same increase. So everybody's like, hey, we just got two kegs from you. We need two more.
It's funny. That's one of those great problems to have. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's like one of those, you always have to check yourself when you're like, oh my goodness, this is so much more additional that we have to do. But then you're like, but wait a second, it's good. It's good additional.
Yeah, that's the kind of problem solving we hope to have to do, where, you know, actually Adam and Jeff right now are looking at some tanks to piece together a bigger brew house, because our current system is a 7-barrel brew house. We're hoping to increase to a 15-barrel and be able to be a little more efficient, be able to produce a little bit more at once instead of having to do, you know, three turns on the brew house to fill our biggest fermenter. Maybe it'll only be two fill the biggest fermenter. So,
and what else do you guys, well, actually, we didn't get to
my background. Yes. Yes. So, my background is social work. So Adam and I went to college together. I'm from New York. He's from North Jackson.
Yes.
So he moved back to the area. I went to New York City for grad school. And then when I was finishing school, he was still community organizing in Youngstown.
Did you do the SUNY thing?
No. So I actually was like right in New York City. I went to Columbia for grad school. So it was.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, right. Girl.
You throw that out there. New York City. You say, I went to Columbia.
It was expensive, but it was a good time. No. That's like, I'm like, oh man, I should have done SUNY. Then I wouldn't have quite the same kind of student loans. That's one of those things that 22-year-old me didn't know. Oh,
you don't even want to know what I did. Mm-hmm. I was offered my, if I went to Ohio State, I would have had my tuition paid for. Uh-huh. Not that I was smart enough to get a scholarship. This was by my family. But I was so stubborn that I was like, no, I want to go to OU. So I will pay for my own college. And not dissing YSU. I'm very happy about that's where I ended up going. Paying for it myself as well.
But yes. Yeah. All those decisions you make in your like early 20s that you don't really understand the weight of those at the
time.
And
we'll try to transfer them on to our children, these lessons learned.
Yes.
But they're going to end up making the same mistake.
Absolutely. So, yeah. So I was in New York City. We graduated in 2009, and Adam came back here and did the community organizing thing and was living actually in a warehouse just down the street from here. And I think working in this building, because MVOC was in this building at the time.
That is great.
So, and then when I graduated, I was like, all right.
He did say at one point he lived in Youngstown.
He did.
I just assumed it was the north side.
No. It was a warehouse that was like sort of renovated to be living space, but not quite. So
is
they
it
dubbed
the art
it
warehouse.
They dubbed it the Ware Home, and it was like right over. yeah. So like that was werewolf. Like I would come visit. And,
I mean, industrial's in.
He was like ahead of the curve on that, I think. And I was, you know, graduating, getting ready to move here, and I was like, we need to find another place because I don't really want to live in the Ware Home. So that was when we moved to Warren. So I've actually been in Warren for 10 years now.
How do you like it?
I love it. I mean, it's one of the places that I think. You can do anything. You just have to be willing to like come up with a way to do it yourself, which is really cool, I think.
It is really cool.
Where I grew up, the cost of living is really, really high. It's very difficult to do things. You know, people that
I
graduated, it's gorgeous, but it's people that I graduated high school with, like, you can't buy a house there anymore. You can't, you know, unless you're inheriting something from your family.
This is
it's
true.
A difficult place to live.
Nobody really wants to know the real estate values in New York.
Oh.
I mean, even the suburbs, as far as all the way up to Montauk.
Well, yeah.
Which is 4 hours away from the city?
Yeah, it's like three. Yep.
So even that far out, I mean, you're paying a ton of money.
So, you know, for us to be able to start a business and buy an old Victorian house and renovate it and do all those things, those are things that we would not have been able to do if we had settled where I grew up. So settling here is amazing. And as Alicia said, like, there's this fantastic community. You know, we lived right downtown Warren on Courthouse Square for years in an apartment there. And, you know, residents have decided, you know, they are so passionate about the place where they live, whether they're from there or not, that, you know, there are people who will go around and snowblow the sidewalks or, you know, do things like that, that just on their own time as volunteers.
Yep.
Stuff that other cities, I don't think that happens the same way.
Well, you guys have embraced and educated a lot of people on the city of Warren. Mm-hmm. I never knew about the Halloween thing.
Oh, the ghost walk. Yeah. Which cool. Actually, so the beer that we release for ghost walk, Aunt Lizzie Pumpkin Ale, Alicia's husband did the artwork for that.
Nice.
It's really spooky and perfect for the story. But yeah, I mean, there's, you know, a good friend of ours is the director of the Historical Society. She's done a ton to, you know, kind of highlight the history of the area, which has a very, very rich history.
It does.
It's super fun for us to get to learn about that and, you know, kind of highlight it and tell some of those stories, you know, by naming a beer, you know, our Levi Irish Ale that's named after, you know, one of the local abolitionists or, you know, things like that, that are pretty cool to get to highlight for people that, you know,
that's right,
might not know otherwise.
And Modern Methods, for anyone who is watching or listening that does not know where the name came from, mm-hmm. where does the name Modern Methods come from?
So in the early 1900s, I want to say 1908 or 1909, the city was putting up a big sign on top of the building that was the city hall at the time. And they pulled the residents and wanted to kind of brand the city. So it was between Wire City, because it was one of the first areas that had electric streetlights, or the city of Modern Methods. So that's the one that won out.
Oh.
So there was a big sign on top of City Hall that said, "Opportunity, it's here. Warren, the city of Modern Methods." And Adam was doing some research in like the, you know, reference section of the library one day and found this great old photo, which is actually on our website, of that old city hall with the big sign. And it just kind of fit that, you know, we want to honor the history, but also that was a period of time for the city that they were very forward looking and thinking, yes, about, you know, being on the cutting edge of, you know, new things and new technology. So we wanted to be able to honor the history and also capture that spirit of doing something ambitious, doing something new. So it kind of fit.
And I like the fact that you have a lot of key players in the city of Warren that don't necessarily look to the past and say, well, this is what it is and that's what it will be. They're like, well, why not?
Mm-hmm.
Let's try it. Why not? Like Mark Marvin,
mm-hmm,
in creating housing downtown Warren.
Yep.
Like, people are like, housing, how's that going to work in downtown Warren? Well, it did, because there was somebody who was willing to take the chance to go forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, even before, you know, so Mark's been investing in buildings for the past maybe 4 years or so. Even before that, the building where Adam and I used to live, that was right on the square, Paul and Holly Clouser bought the building, put a beautiful apartment on the top floor that's their apartment, and we lived on the second floor, and they've got some office space down below. That's where, if you come to the alley, there's a little shortcut that goes from, yes, Dave Grohl out. So that's that building.
Okay.
Beautiful World is in there now, which has, you know, great smoothies and salads and all that kind of stuff. And those are things that are a little bit hidden, tucked away. If you haven't spent time right there, you might not know about.
That's true.
But Warren, actually, you know, we live just a couple blocks north of where the brewery is. I can walk downtown, you know, get a coffee at Nova, go get a smoothie.
You know, I'm big on walking.
It's a really nice thing to be in a walkable area, especially, yes, with the fact that I, you know, the last place I lived before Warren was New York City. I didn't even have a car. I had to buy a car when I moved here. So having something that's walkable that I can, you know, throw my toddler in the stroller and we can, you know, get to the park, or
that's,
we,
right,
just walked to the splash pad at Packard Park the other day. It was way too hot to walk that far, but at least we got to cool off once we got there.
That is true. Well, supposedly we're going to have cooler temperatures this weekend.
I hope so.
I'm excited about it. I'm like, I'm okay with not having 80,
yeah,
90 degrees.
Yeah.
I'm totally fine with that.
Yeah. So, I mean, we love Warren. That's, you know,
Warren is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say, I hang out there way more now than ever before because of your brewery. So.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that.
So I have a question for you. Would you ever go brick and mortar, or are you like, no, food truck is it?
Because
a part of me right now, with how so many are struggling for employees, and like, you have the ideal model right now.
So yes, if we were to go brick and mortar, it wouldn't be a traditional restaurant. We would probably do takeout service, like where people would come and pick what they wanted and then go. But the main reason for us to find like a permanent space, we've always been looking, is to be able to make more pierogi.
Oh, okay.
So, like, because I'm limited to what I can fit in my truck.
That's true.
So to be able to go and find a bigger space where we can like really mass produce, I could get a couple people in because we hand pinch everything. Everything, like I mix the dough by hand, like everything's done by us.
Would you ever do like a pierogi making class?
Yeah. Oh gosh. Yeah.
That would be fun.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I'd be good at it, but I definitely have fun.
We've talked about mm-hmm. doing some mm-hmm. cool stuff like that, like a pierogi class or like, a, you know, having people come and, you know, do, you know, just, I really like to, I think it's Andrea who says, she calls us cultural evangelists.
Oh, wow. Like
sharing the history, yeah. Sharing the culture.
And like, yeah. With like, not to go back to Simply Slavic, mm-hmm. but because that's something that we both collaborate mm-hmm. in.
Yep.
They make a beer called Rodina, mm-hmm. and it's something that they make specifically for Simply Slavic. And what one of the first years that we did it, we had to go up there at 5 a.m. and they were doing just a kind of a promotion for that, but where we had to go up there and
Is this the news they always make you wake up at what time?
Yeah.
Oh, it's so early.
It's horrible.
it's wild. And I'm texting Adam. I'm like, is it 3 a.m. yet? Or is it time to go up there? He's like, I'm still asleep. Please, mm-hmm. please stop. I'm asleep. But we went up there and they were like, could you do a pierogi class for television? So they have like the bar tables mm-hmm. and I'm rolling out pierogi dough at mm-hmm. 4:30 a.m. I'm like, all right, you guys.
I think I was the real winner of this situation because I think I was pregnant and I woke up and Adam had brought home the leftover pierogi. So I got to have pierogi for breakfast and I won the day.
You did win. That is a win.
Yeah.
Right. Because he was like, what are we doing with all these pierogi, Alicia? And I'm like, you, what are you doing with all these pierogi? Yeah. You take them.
That's awesome.
So you guys had to get up and work, and then I got to wake up to pierogi breakfast.
I mean, lucky.
That is lucky. Great. That is lucky. I feel like it's totally a breakfast food.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Definitely. Oh, heck yeah.
Absolutely.
Heck yeah.
Adam also has a whole plan for Alicia if he's going to set up, like, mail order where people can... Adam thinks big. He likes to, you know, so he had a whole...
And he's very detailed, though.
Yes.
So Adam was phenomenal enough to share with me his business plan. Because he's brilliant. Mm-hmm. And he sent it to me and I was like, this is like over 90 pages. Okay.
Most of our, so that's another kind of fun thing about, you know, being in this area and starting the business the way that we did. We didn't start with a loan. We started with, we have, you know, between 30 and 40 investors, most of whom it was, you know, very like, relatively small investment, but we have people who really care about and believe in. Yes. So I would say probably at least 50%, if not more, of the investors never read the whole business plan. They were just like, they know Adam, they know us, they know, you know, and they were investing in the idea. There were definitely some people who appreciated the detail, but I'm sure a lot of them didn't read everything.
I read it.
He did. Cool. He did a ton of research. We would sit down and do, you know, and this was where kind of his community organizing background came in. You know, yes. He would set up one-to-ones and we would talk about, you know, when you go visit a tap room, what are the things that make you want to come back? You know, he did a lot of that market research. We, you know, anytime we would travel anywhere, that's how we would spend our time, is like going and checking out new places. So
checking out new breweries.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
It's I'm not starting a brewery, but I do that market research too.
You know what? It's good. It's fun. And I feel like that's where you find, you know, cool people. We would go to a new city, go hang out at a brewery and hear about a show that was happening that night or another, like a great restaurant to go to, or, you know, you just, a lot of times the smaller local breweries are kind of, you know, tuned into other great stuff happening in the different areas.
What I love about it is that it just shows the fact that how you don't have to have something big. You don't need the Walmart to be an anchor store. You don't need JCPenney's to be an anchor store, but these microbreweries can be your anchor store in a shopping center, in its own, like an old train station. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter, because you do have such a vast amount of people and community members that constantly come in and out, which is...
It's its own ecosystem.
It really is. Mm-hmm. It's phenomenal.
Yeah. And it's fun to see how you can get involved in different things. So, you know, one of the things that we started doing what in February we did the first one. We did Supper Club.
Yes.
So Alicia was our first food partner for Supper Club, and will actually be again in July. She's coming back. So we're each month we're partnering with, you know, a local chef or restaurant or food truck to put together a meal that pairs with a special brew. You know, something that you can only get That's when you're a member cool. of Supper Club, and people love it. And it's something where, you know, you might be exposed to a restaurant or a chef or somebody that you didn't know about before, mm-hmm. or there are people who follow, you know, one of the food trucks and they're like, okay, well, I'll try this beer too. You know, we kind of have that symbiotic relationship in a lot of ways.
That's similar to what you guys are mm-hmm. doing with the Science of Brewing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So Modern Methods is partnering with Mark Canzonetta mm-hmm. with the Bistro, which Mark was like, when we first presented him the idea to see, because this is something new we're doing with the Science of Brewing. When we first presented the idea to Mark, Mark was like, I want Modern Methods.
Yeah. Well, because he's a Warren boy. He's, you know, obviously Bistro's here, but he's from Warren and yes. very much like, yeah, feels that
he
connection.
He loves your beer. Yep. And yep. he definitely has that connection with you guys. Mm-hmm. So we were like, definitely, Mark, you get Modern Methods.
Yeah. And that's one of my, like, I'm definitely a food person. So that's, you know, one of my favorite things to do is like pair it was a funny experience when Adam first started homebrewing, and I didn't know much about craft beer at the time, nor did he, honestly. He just kind of, you know, we tried a few beers and he was like, I can make some beer. This will be fun. And, you know, he first is giving me some beer, you know, what do you think? How does it taste? And I was just kind of like, I don't know. And the very first one that he had me try was a Hefeweizen, and I tasted it and I was like, I don't know, it kind of just tastes like bananas. And he was like, yes. And I said, wait, that's all I have to do is tell you what food it tastes like.
Pretty much.
So that was, you know, now 10 years ago, like my introduction to thinking about the flavor profile of a beer. And, you know, obviously it's not just saying what food it tastes like, but that, you know, made it a lot more approachable. And I think it's something that we've tried to do, you know, pre-COVID, and we'll be starting it again. You know, we did a beer school where we did a quick tour yes. of the brewing space and then talked about, like, here are the different flavor profiles that you look for. Here's how you taste a beer. Mm-hmm. Here's how you think about the flavors of a beer. Here's what, you know, you might like about. So if you like this beer and this style, this is something that a lot of the flavor comes from the yeast. So you might also like this style. You know, I think a lot of that education was really important early on and continues to be because craft beer can be a little bit intimidating. You know, if you don't have that experience, it's like, well, I don't know. It just, I don't know anything about it. It's a little more expensive. I don't really want to, you know, dip my toe. So thinking about helping people just have it be a little more approachable.
Level,
yeah.
Entry level beers before you go mm-hmm. further up into the different spectrum that you can.
Yeah.
So let's talk about what we have going on this
yes,
weekend.
Yes. Yes. So starting tomorrow, we will have our Jeanette Cream Ale, which is our annual 4th of July beer that we release. The can is red, white, and blue and everything. So, you know, festive, even the can label.
It is good.
Mm-hmm. This was one of Adam's very first homebrew recipes that he really worked on from scratch, you know, working on all grain, coming up with the recipe himself.
What's the ABV?
6.2. So it's a little bit.
One can between three of us, so we're okay.
Yeah. So, and this is, it doesn't taste like 6.2. So, you mm-hmm. know, I think this was the first beer after my son was born.
That's the problem with all the high ABVs.
Yeah.
Is that they don't taste like they're high ABVs. Right.
Yeah.
You just know it because you're giving it into a small mm-hmm. glass. That's how you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. After Alex was born, it was like, oh, I'll have a couple Jeanettes. Oh, a couple Jeanettes after not having any beer for 9 months. I was like, okay, I feel that.
That's awesome.
But yeah, this is, you know, again, it's going to have a little bit of that sweetness from corn, not overpowering sweetness, nice, clean, kind of that, you know, flavorful, mm-hmm. but still crushable. You can have it all day long and still be, you know, not kind of overwhelmed by it. And, you know,
and
this
eat
was,
it with pierogies.
You can absolutely have it with
so
pierogies.
Drink it with pierogies.
Yeah. And this was one that, you know, kind of that like working class beer. The name Jeanette is after the last blast furnace from Youngstown was named Jeanette. So, and then also a little play on, you know, Jenny Cream Ale, Jeanette, yeah. Jenny, you know, but it was, so it's named after the last blast furnace from Youngstown.
Very creative with your name.
All That's right. what happens when you have an English major. And then Jeff's really, he's not an English major, but he is also very creative with the naming. So
that's pretty awesome. Yeah. All right. Final part. These are questions. Three questions. And mm-hmm. you each have to answer them. What's your favorite beer?
mine. So my favorite one that they make, because I love cooking with it, is the scrappy German.
That's what I said.
But then I'm also very particularly fond of the one that's named after us.
Scrappy German.
The Baltic Porter.
Yeah, we have a Bopsch's Baltic Porter.
Oh.
With a really cool label that Thaddeus Allen did.
Heck yeah.
Yeah. We haven't done that one in a while. We'll have to do that again when it gets a little colder.
I was out traveling whenever he thought of that name, and he sent me a message. He's like, what do you think if we had a beer named Bopsch's? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to like, I don't know what kind. I want to know what kind. I'm like, it depends. He's like, a Baltic Porter. And I was like, yeah, that sounds good. I'm like, you have to have me there when you have it, though. Mm-hmm.
So, I think that's fair.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's definitely fair.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
What about you?
So probably my go-to would be that I go back to over and over again is our Dub City.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Like our flagship IPA. That's one that like if I haven't had it in a little while.
Look at that.
Mm-hmm.
Dub City.
Yep. If I haven't, which some people ask about the name, they're actually like Dub City Warren starts with a W. There are like signs around Warren that say, you know, Dub City. So that's where the name for that one came from. But that's one that if I've been having a bunch of our specialty beer and I go back to it, especially if it's a super fresh batch, I'm just like, oh man, that Dub City is really good. The other one that I'm super into right now is our Bijou Belgian Whip Beer with Tangerine. That one's
so
really
good.
Really good. And
that'd
my
be really good for the summer.
One of my favorite beers, actually from a brewery around the corner from my parents' house, is a double white, you know, a Belgian whip beer. So that one is like, that was the first craft beer that I liked.
Is that the one that I went to when I was in Montauk?
Well, so this would have been in Southampton, the public house in Southampton.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So
we'll be back there this Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm.
Go to the public house. They make really good beer. So they have the double white, which is a Belgian wit beer also. And that was like one of the first craft beers that I really liked. And so the Bijou is not only a fantastic Belgian, but it, you know, has a little sentimentality for me. So the Bijou Tangerine especially is a really good one.
It's so good to cook with too. Mm-hmm. That was another one.
Oh yeah. You did the dressing for your,
we made a vinaigrette for a radish salad with the Bijou with the Tangerine. And I added some more Satsuma to it, and it just brightened it up. It was so good.
Do you cook the beer?
Absolutely. Well, no. I didn't cook.
Okay. Not for the vinaigrette.
No, not for the vinaigrette. I didn't cook that at all. But like that's one of our things, especially when we work with a brewery, is we like to incorporate their beer into our food.
Yes.
For our 3-year anniversary party, Alicia did, it was like baseball themed, and Alicia did ballpark food. She made scrappy German beer cheese. That was,
and the scrappy German makes the best beer cheese.
That would be really good. Beer cheese is really good.
It was amazing.
So good.
But Alicia has a whole, like, you have enough recipes to make a cookbook of you know, cooking with local brewery
beer. Hopefully
that'll
be something that is a project that we are working on. We're working on a collaborative with our friends that are own breweries locally that because we've worked with their beer so much in cooking, releasing a cookbook.
That would be great.
It's a project. It's in the works, but it's long coming. I always get like stopped up, and we're working on some seasonal cookbooks too. So hopefully those will be things that we'll see within
that. That's a great recipe.
After taking one of your classes first, I feel like I would need to take one of your classes first before I attempted it on my own.
Yeah. Oh, well, and that's the thing too, is as far as like people learning how to make pierogi, like I need people to learn how to, need people to learn about their food culture because there's so many people that are like, my grandma made this. I haven't had it in 20 years. And it's like, but it's so crazy. They still remember the taste of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like even all my friends, I'll ask them for Christmas Eve, are you doing the seven fishes?
Yes.
And I've noticed that has gone down too. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of that culture is not being passed on because their grandmother used to do it. Their grandmother is too old to do it. And the kids aren't doing it.
Mm-hmm,
so they're like, oh, we're not doing it. My grandma's not able to do it right now. So we're just going to have, which I love ham. I wouldn't deny ham at all. But but that's the one thing I always like. I wish I married an Italian just so I can have
the seven fishes. Yeah.
It's a really special experience, though. I mean, one of my favorite cooking experiences was Adam's family is involved with the Saxon Club. in Austin Town. And, you know, one of my favorite things was going before the Trachtenball and making a bunch of schnitzel with, you know, his grandmother. And, you know, so it's not, yes. it's a really special thing to be part really of that is. Kind of handing down of that food culture. So,
and I think that's sweet that like you guys are so mindful of that, because like one of the first conversations I ever had with Adam was him going, "Oh, my oma makes stuffed cabbage." Mm-hmm. And then that's been like a running thing with like, with our relationship, is he'll send me a picture. He'll be like, "I made the stuffed cabbage." Mm-hmm. Or he'll be like, "Look at all the stuffed cabbages my oma made." And I'm like, get it. Make them. Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. Awesome.
Yep. All right. One more question. What's your favorite local gem?
Oh, that's a tough one. Favorite local gem. I can only pick one.
Only one.
Oh, there's so many.
There are.
I that's a really, really tough one. I don't know. Do you have one that's coming to mind?
I mean, I am just thinking of the ice cream that we had yesterday.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Alicia came over for dinner last night, and we had Cockeye Creamery ice cream.
I was going to say
it. Yeah.
But I didn't want to say it, and then you were like, no, not that one.
Yeah. So, yeah. Cockeye, like, barbecue, ice cream, everything. Awesome.
They are pretty great.
I have a really hard time choosing between that. And a lot of it too has to do with like, it's just our neighbor down the alley, but Weston Main is fantastic too.
Oh, Weston Main's great.
Yeah.
Okay.
Awesome. And they're in the process of opening up another spot on Courthouse Square that's like very traditional ramen. So there'll be Noodle Fun and Weston Main, which is a really nice thing when we get takeout from there all the time when we're working or doing other things. So I cheated. I picked more than one, but those are.
Well, I will say this. People sometimes are like, oh, too many restaurants. You can never have too many food options in restaurants. No. I'm sorry. Like, no. You just can't.
Well, and that's one of the really nice things, I think, even within craft beer and with, you know, restaurants in the downtown area, like we're not each other's competition.
No.
We're building that, you know, people are going to come to us, to, you know, any of the other local breweries that are fantastic, instead of, you know, going to a chain restaurant and having, you know, the same meal they could get at any other one of those chains and a domestic beer. Yeah. You know, it's all about building that community together. So we're like on the same team, not each other's competition. And I think everybody kind of understands that, which is so cool.
I think it's phenomenal. And somebody who has been to a lot of the local breweries, I love the fact that each one, it's their own.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yes, it might be the same retail, but it's each one is different.
Yeah. Like, the aesthetic's different. The beers are different.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then even when they collaborate together, it's something so totally out of left field.
Exactly.
My gosh.
And not only that, but you guys are a big driver for people outside the area to come visit us.
Yeah.
And see for themselves everything that we have to offer, which
absolutely.
Is also awesome.
It's always a fun thing when Saturday during the day is like my favorite shift to work the tap room, because it's often when we'll get people who are like, oh, I drove from Pittsburgh today to come check it out. And then they'll say, oh, I'm a really big fan of, you know, kind of wild ales and sours and funky fermentation. Oh, you have to go to Noble Creature. You know, we send people to other local breweries because and local restaurants, because it's, you know, like that's part of, okay, they're going to come back because there are multiple spots to go.
Yeah, we're not a one-stop shop here.
Yeah.
There's plenty of places for people to go visit and enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you guys.
Thank you.
Which one should we toast with?
Oh, I'd say Jeanette. 4th of July. We got our Independence Day. Happy 4th.
Cheers. Nostrovia.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.
Homes and Hops is proudly supported by Platt Insurance, your local independent insurance agency offering auto, home, life, business, and farm insurance. They also have a team of specialists that help you with insuring your brewery or winery. Platt Insurance, helping you protect your tomorrow. For more information or a quote, please call them at 330-856-6244 or visit them on the web at platinsurance.com.